Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dangerous Lover by Lisa Marie Rice. Narrated by Kelsey Navarro. Somerville, Washington. St. Jude Homeless Shelter. Christmas Eve. He needed Caroline like he needed light and air. More. The tall, emaciated boy dressed in rags rose from his father's lifeless body sprawled bonelessly on the icy concrete floor of the shelter. His father had been dying for a long time. Most of his life, in fact. There had always been something in him that didn't want to live. The boy couldn't remember the last time he'd seen his father clean and sober. He had no mother. All his life, it had been just the two of them, father and son, drifting from shelter to shelter, staying until they were kicked out. The boy stood for a moment, looking down at his only blood relation in this world, dead in a pool of vomit and shit. Nobody had noticed his father's dead body yet. Nobody ever noticed them, or even looked their way if they could help it. Even the other lost, hopeless souls in the shelter recognized someone worse off than they were and shunned them. The boy looked around at the averted faces, eyes cast to the floor. Nobody cared that the drunk wasn't getting up again. Nobody cared what happened to his son. There was nothing for the boy here. Nothing. He had to get to Caroline. He had to move fast before they discovered that his father was dead. If they found the body here, the police and social workers and administrators would come for him. He was 18, but he couldn't prove it. And he knew enough about the way things worked to know that he'd become a ward of the state. He'd be locked up in some prison-like orphanage. No. No way. He'd rather die. The boy moved toward the stairs that would take him up out of the shelter into the gelid, sleety afternoon. An old woman looked up as he passed by, cloudy eyes flickering with recognition. Susie. Ancient, toothless Susie. She wasn't lost in alcohol like his father. She was lost in the smoky depths of her own mind. Ben, chocolate, chocolate? She cackled and smacked her wrinkled, rubbery lips. He'd once shared a chocolate bar Caroline had brought him, and Susie had looked to him for sweets ever since. Here he was known as Ben. In the last shelter, Portland, was it? His father had called him Dick. Naming him after the manager of the shelter always bought them some time. Not enough. Eventually, the shelters got sick of his father's drunken rages and found a way to kick them out. Susie's hands, with her long, black, ragged nails, grasped at him. Ben stopped and held her hand a moment. "No chocolate, Susie," he said gently. Like a child, her eyes filled with tears. Ben stooped to give her grimy, wrinkled cheek a kiss, then rushed up the stairs and out into the open air. No hesitation as he turned into Morrison Street. He knew exactly where he was going. To Greenbriar's. To Caroline. To the one person on the face of the earth who cared about him. To the only person who treated him as a human being, and not some half-wild animal who smelled of dirty clothes and rotting food. Ben hadn't eaten in 2 days. And he had only a too-short cotton jacket to keep the cold away. His big, bony wrists stuck out of the jacket sleeves, and he had to tuck his hands into his armpits to keep them warm. No matter. He'd been cold and hungry before. The only warm thing he wanted right now was Caroline's smile. Like the arrows of a compass to a lodestar, he leaned into the wind to walk the mile and a half to Greenbriar's. No one looked his way as he trudged by. He was invisible, a lone tall figure dressed in rags. It didn't bother him. He'd always been invisible. Being invisible had helped him survive. The weather worsened. The wind blew icy needles of sleet directly into his eyes until he had to close them into slits. Didn't matter. He had an excellent sense of direction and could make his way to Greenbriar's blindfolded. Head down, arms wrapped around himself to conserve what little warmth he'd been able to absorb at the shelter. Ben slowly left behind the dark, sullen buildings of the part of the city that housed the shelter. Soon the roads opened up into tree-lined avenues. Ancient brick buildings gave way to graceful modern buildings of glass and steel. No cars passed. The weather was too severe for that. There was nobody on the streets. Under his feet, the icy buildup crackled. He was almost there. The houses were big here, in this wealthy part of town. Large, well-built, with sloping green lawns that were now covered in ice and snow. He usually made his way through the back streets, invisible as always. Someone like him in this place of rich and powerful people would be immediately stopped by the police, so we always took the back streets on a normal day. But today, the streets were deserted, and he walked openly on the broad sidewalks. It usually took him half an hour to walk to Greenbriar's, but today the ice-slick sidewalks and hard wind dragged at him. An hour after leaving the shelter, he was still walking. He was strong, but hunger and cold started to wear him down. His feet, in their cracked shoes, were numb. Music sounded. So lightly at first that he wondered whether he was hallucinating from the cold and hunger. Notes floated in the air, as if borne by the snow. He rounded a corner and there it was. Greenbriar's. Caroline's home. His heart pounded as it loomed out of the sleety mist. It always pounded when he came here, just as it pounded whenever she was near. He usually came in through the back entrance, when her parents were at work and Caroline and her brother in school. The maid left at noon, and from noon to one, the house was his to explore. He could move in and out like a ghost. The back door lock was flimsy, and he'd been picking locks since he was five. He'd wander from room to room, soaking up the rich, scented atmosphere of Caroline's home. The shelter rarely had hot water, but he took care to wash as well as he could whenever he headed out to Greenbriar's. The stench of the shelter had no place in Caroline's home. Greenbriar's was so far beyond what he could ever hope to have that there was no jealousy, no envy in him as he touched the backs of the thousands of books in the library, walked into the sweet-smelling closets full of new clothes, opened the huge refrigerator to see fresh fruits and vegetables. Caroline's family was rich in a way he couldn't comprehend, as if they belonged to a different species living on another planet. To him, it was simply Caroline's world, and living in it for an hour a day was like touching the sky. Today, nobody could see him approach in the storm. He walked right up the driveway, feeling the gravel through the thin soles of his shoes. The snow intensified, the wind whipping painful icy particles through the air. Ben knew how to move quietly, stealthily when he had to, but it wasn't necessary now. There was no one to see him or hear him as he crunched his way to the window. The music was louder now, the source a yellow glow. It wasn't until he had reached the end of the driveway that Ben realized that the yellow glow was the big 12-pane window of the living room, and the music was someone playing the piano. He knew that living room well, as he knew all the rooms of the big mansion. He'd wandered them all, for hours. He knew that the huge living room always smelled faintly of wood smoke from the big fireplace. He knew that the couches were deep and comfortable, and the rugs soft and thick. He walked straight up to the window, the snow already filling in the tracks his shoes made. No one could see him. No one could hear him. He was tall and could see over the windowsill if he stood on tiptoe. Light had drained from the sky, and he knew no one in the living room could see him outside. The living room was like something out of a painting. Hundreds of candles flickered everywhere, on the mantelpiece, on all the tables. The coffee table held the remains of a feast, half a ham on a carving board, a huge loaf of bread, a big platter of cheeses, several cakes and two pies, a teapot, cups, glasses, an open bottle of wine, a bottle of whiskey. Water pooled in his mouth. He hadn't eaten for 2 days. His empty stomach ached. He could almost smell the food in the room through the window pane. Then food completely disappeared from his mind. A lovely voice rang out, clear and pure, singing a Christmas carol he'd heard in a shopping mall once while he helped his dad panhandle, something about a shepherd boy. It was Caroline's voice. He'd recognize it anywhere. A frigid gust of wind buffeted the garden, raking his face with sleet. He didn't even feel it as he edged his head further up over the windowsill. There she was, as always, His breath caught when he saw her. She was so beautiful. It sometimes hurt him to look at her. When she visited him in the shelter, he'd refused to look at her for the first few minutes. It was like looking into the sun. He watched her hungrily, committing each second to memory. He remembered every word she'd ever spoken to him. He'd read and reread every book she'd ever brought him. He remembered every item of clothing he'd ever seen her in. She was at the piano, playing. He'd never seen anyone actually play the piano, and it seemed like magic to him. Her fingers moved gracefully over the black and white keys, and music poured out like water in a stream. His head filled with the wonder of it. She was in profile. Her eyes were closed as she played, a slight smile on her face, as if she and the music shared a secret understanding. She was singing another song even he recognized, Silent Night. Her voice rose pure and light. The piano was tall and black, with lit candles held in shiny brass holders along the sides. Though the entire room was filled with candles, Caroline glowed more brightly than any of them. She was lit with light, her pale skin gleaming in the glowing candlelight as she sang and played. The song came to an end, and her hands dropped to her lap. She looked up, smiling at the applause, then started another carol, her voice rising pure and high. The whole family was there. Mr. Lake, a big-shot businessman, tall, blonde, looking like the king of the world. Mrs. Lake, impossibly beautiful and elegant. Toby, Caroline's 7-year-old brother. There was another person in the room, a handsome young man. He was elegantly dressed, his dark blonde hair combed straight back. His fingers were beating time with the carol on the piano top. When Caroline stopped playing, he leaned down and gave her a kiss on the mouth. Caroline's parents laughed, and Toby did a somersault on the big rug. Caroline smiled up at the handsome young man and said something that made him laugh. He bent to kiss her hair. Ben watched, his heart nearly stopping. This was Caroline's boyfriend. Of course. They shared a look. Blonde, poised, privileged. Good-looking, rich, educated. They belonged to the same species. They were meant to be together. It was so clear. His heart slowed in his chest. For the first time, he felt the danger from the cold. He felt its icy fingers reaching out to him to drag him down to where his father had gone. Maybe he should just let it take him. There was nothing for him here, in this lovely candlelit room. He would never be a part of this world. He belonged to the darkness and the cold. Ben dropped back down on his heels, backing slowly away from the house until the yellow light of the window was lost in the sleet and mist. He was shaking with the cold as he trudged back down the driveway, the wet snow seeping through the holes in his shoes to soak his feet. Half an hour later, he came to the interstate junction and stopped, swaying on his feet. The human in him wanted to sink to the ground, curl up in a ball and wait for despair and then death to take him, as they had taken his father. It wouldn't take long. But the animal in him was strong and wanted fiercely to live. To the right, the road stretched northward, right up into Canada. To the left, it went south. If he went north, he would die. It was as simple as that. Turning left, Ben shuffled forward, head low, into the icy wind. 1. Somerville, Washington. Christmas Eve. 12 years later. She was here. He could feel her. He could smell her. Walking into the small bookshop with the old-fashioned bell over the door, the man now known as Jack Prescott knew he'd found her. He was exhausted, having traveled for 48 hours straight on a pirogue from Abuja to Freetown, via Air Afrique from Lungi Airport to Paris, Air France from Paris to Atlanta, Delta from Atlanta to Seattle. Then a rickety puddle jumper he could have flown better himself to Somerville. Even through his exhaustion, though, his senses were keen. 12 years later, He could still recognize her touches. The candles on the windowsill, the gentle harp music playing faintly in the background, a smell of cinnamon, vanilla, roses, and her. Unmistakable. Unforgettable. Coming in from the airport, the news that she was still in Somerville and, astonishingly, still single, had blown him away. He hadn't been expecting that. He hadn't been expecting anything but difficulty and frustration in tracking her down. He had all the time in the world to do it in now. Colonel Eugene Prescott's death had freed him from the bonds of loyalty and love. The day after the colonel's death, Jack had sold ENP security and flown to Sierra Leone to take care of the last of his responsibility to the man who'd become his father. It had cost gunfire and bloodshed, pain and violence. But he'd taken care of the mess as his father had asked on his deathbed. Jack had done what had to be done. Salvaged his father's reputation, punished the fuckers who'd mounted a rogue operation, and was finally free from all responsibility for the first time in 12 years. His life as a ranger and his duty to the colonel and his company had kept him busy. As long as the colonel was alive, Jack had tried to keep Caroline out of his head, and he was successful, mostly, except at night. She had her life, wherever it was, and he had the colonel to serve. But after stopping Vince Deaver, he was free. He turned straight around and flown as fast as modern aviation could take him from Africa to Somerville. It was crazy. He knew it was crazy to look for her here, 12 years later. Why would Caroline stay in Somerville? She was beautiful, talented, smart, rich. She'd end up where all beautiful, smart, talented, rich women go. Some big city on a coast, maybe even abroad. And no way could she be single. Not someone who looked like Caroline. She'd be married with kids. Any man in his right mind would snatch her right up and keep her pregnant to be sure she stayed. He had no illusions. Caroline wasn't for him. She was probably happy and fulfilled, with a family of her own. Jack knew he'd never have a family. It wasn't in his destiny. He was going to keep out of Caroline's life because he had no place in it. But Jack had to see her. Needed to see her, like he needed to breathe. Just one more look before starting the next stage of his life, whatever that would be. He'd closed the door on ENP security when he'd buried his father. The company was gone, the house sold. Everything he needed was in his duffel bag and suitcase. He was ready to turn the page, right after one last look at her. So he'd come here to start his quest, to the last place he'd been before becoming Jack Prescott, to the last place he'd seen Caroline. Her family was established here. There was bound to be a way to track her down. He didn't care where she'd gone, whether she was still in the U.S. or had settled abroad or had gone to the moon. He was an excellent tracker, the best there was. He'd find her, eventually, however long it took. He had the rest of his life to do it in, and he certainly wasn't hurting for money. Just one look, and he'd disappear forever. In the end, he didn't have to track her down, though. The taxi driver in from the airport knew where she was. Here. Right here. Where she'd been all along. In Somerville. Single. Jack had been planning on checking into a hotel, cleaning up, having a nice meal in a restaurant, then sleeping for 24 hours. He'd been in a firefight, and he'd been traveling for 2 days straight. He was exhausted. It was Christmas Eve. Everything would be closed on Christmas Day and the next day, Sunday. On Monday, he planned to start his search for Caroline. But then the taxi driver said Caroline Lake, his Caroline Lake, was still in Somerville and ran a small bookshop. And so there was no question where he'd go. Straight to her. Quick, light footsteps on the hardwood floor and shit. Before he was ready, there she was. Oh! Caroline Lake stopped suddenly, the welcoming smile dying on her face as she saw him. Hello. He knew what she saw. She saw a tall, heavily muscled man with long black hair tied back carelessly, dressed in cheap, rough, dirty, crumpled clothes. He hadn't showered or shaved in 3 days, and he knew that lines of exhaustion creased his stubbled face. He knew what she felt, too. Scared. She was alone with him. He had unusually sharp hearing, and he heard no other human sounds in the small shop. The icy sleet storm outside was so severe that the streets outside were deserted as well. If he turned out to be violent, there would be no one to hear her cries for help. There was nothing he could do about the way he looked. Dangerous. The truth was, he was every inch as dangerous as he looked. Though Caroline couldn't possibly see the Glock in the shoulder holster, or the tactical folder in the boot, or the .22 in the ankle holster, an armed man carries himself differently than an unarmed man. He'd killed 4 men in 2 days and 2 continents ago. At some subliminal level, she was picking up on this. She was standing very still, nostrils slightly flared, instinctively pulling in oxygen in case she had to run. She wouldn't know that was what she was doing, but he did. He was an expert on human prey and how it reacted to danger. First, diffuse her fears. He stood utterly still, watching her carefully. He would rather rip his own throat out than hurt her in any way, but she couldn't know that. All she knew was she was all alone with a big, potentially violent man. Good evening. He kept his voice low and without inflection, calm. He kept his body language utterly non-threatening, moving only his lungs to breathe, not smiling, not frowning. It was the only way he knew to reassure her. Words wouldn't do it. Stillness would. If he were crazy, he couldn't stay so still. Agitated minds make for agitated bodies. It worked. She relaxed slightly, nodded, smiled. He couldn't smile back. For a second, he couldn't breathe. Christ, she is so fucking beautiful. She'd somehow become even more beautiful than his memory. How could that be? Slender, yet curvy. Not tall, yet long-limbed. Her hair was the richest color he'd ever seen. A wild mix of reds and golds, with pale champagne streaks running through it. Her coloring was so vivid the eye naturally gravitated to where she was. Jack couldn't imagine looking at another woman while Caroline was in the room. She stepped back slightly. He was staring at her. Worse, he was scaring her. Terrible weather, he rumbled. His voice was deep, unusually so, but he kept his tone even and low. It took a huge effort, one of the hardest things he'd ever done in a hard life, but he took his eyes off her. Hungry as he was for the sight of her, he couldn't keep staring or she'd freak. So he looked around him, at what she'd created. It was a pretty bookshop, with a high-beamed ceiling, hardwood floor with what looked like expensive rugs scattered around, pinewood shelves and tables with bestsellers on them. The harp music had given way to an a cappella choir of women's voices singing madrigals. Over the smell of her, soap, shampoo, and the scent of roses that haunted his nights, he could smell potpourri, candle wax and resin from the small Christmas tree decorated with miniature books standing in a big red ceramic pot in the corner. The entire shop was warm and welcoming, a delight to all the senses. Jack had good peripheral vision and kept looking around until she visibly relaxed. He turned back to her. Very nice bookshop. My compliments. Her lips turned up in a slight smile. Thank you. And it's not usually so deserted. I was expecting a Christmas Eve rush for all the lazy bones who haven't bought their presents yet. But the weather has kept everyone indoors. Jack tried not to frown and look disapproving. What was the matter with her? Jesus, the last thing she should do when alone with a man was point out just how alone they were. She'd always been like that. Too trusting. Once, in the shelter, old man McGurdy, doped up on God knows what shit he'd scored on the streets, had sidled up to her when she'd smiled at him. Jack knew what McGurdy was like when he was high. The filthy fucker would have put his hands on Caroline if Jack hadn't blocked him. After Caroline left, Jack had shoved McGurdy up against the wall, showed him the Bowie knife he'd shoplifted, and promised McGurdy that if he ever so much as breathed in Caroline's direction, ever again, he could kiss his balls goodbye. Jack had meant every word. pretty, slender ringless hands opened wide. Can I help you with something? We have a fairly good selection, and I can order anything you want if we don't stock it. It takes about a week to arrive. She smiled up at him. She was a woman now. A stunningly beautiful woman, whose face showed the sorrow she'd suffered. The chatty taxicab driver had told him all about Caroline and the downfall of the Lakes. Jack had heard all about the car accident that had killed her parents and injured her little brother. The discovery at their death that Mr. Lake had been making bad investments, and that there was no money to cover the hospital bills, with barely enough to pay for the double funeral. Then 6 years of caring for an invalid brother, only to lose him 2 months ago, saddling her with even more debts. All of that showed in her face. Faint lines starred her eyes. Though they were still that hauntingly silver-gray color, she'd slimmed down even more. The young Caroline had had a lovely open face with a perpetually sunny smile. This Caroline showed sorrow and serenity, the sunniness gone. And yet, Jack could still see the young Caroline, the heart of her, the lovely, gentle girl who'd befriended an outcast inside the beautiful woman who'd known heartache and grief. The young girl had haunted his days and nights. The woman in front of him nearly brought him to his knees. Christ, he was staring again, lost. She'd said something about books. He didn't want books. The sign, he said. I beg your pardon? She swirled a lock of shiny red gold hair behind a small ear. He'd seen her do it 100 times. You've got a sign at the front of the shop. Rooms to let. Do you still have a room available? It had been the motor-mouth taxi driver who told him that Caroline rented rooms to boarders to boost her income from the bookshop. Caroline looked at him for a long moment, clearly sizing him up. He couldn't shrink, and he couldn't take a shower and shave, and he couldn't change his clothes right then. All he could do was remain motionless and keep his expression neutral. There was nothing he could say or do to convince her if she didn't trust him enough to want him in her home. The only thing he could do was wait. And hope. Finally, Caroline sighed. Yes. As it happens, my boarders just left, so I do have a room. But let's discuss it sitting down, why don't we? You can leave those behind my desk if you'd like. Those were his ancient duffel bag with a brand new luggage lock and a suitcase. No way he was leaving them out of his sight. Thanks, I'll just put them down next to me so no one will trip over them, he said casually, hefting the duffel bag over his shoulder and picking up the suitcase. She nodded and turned to walk between the rows of books to the back corner of the shop, where a small sitting area had been set up. Though she was more slender than when she was a girl, she was also curvier. She had a tiny waist that begged for his hands to span, rounding out to a perfect ass. He had to work hard to keep his eyes off it, in case she turned around and found him ogling her. That would have gotten him tossed out on his ass, PDQ. Jack recognized a couch and 2 small armchairs that had once been in her father's study. They were old and worn, but still looked comfortable. Jack put his duffel bag behind one of the small armchairs and sat down in it, hoping it would take his weight. He wasn't built for old, delicate furniture, but he needn't have worried. The armchair might be shabby, but it was of good quality. Would you like me to take your jacket, Mr.? Caroline held out a hand. Prescott. Jack Prescott, and no, thanks. I'm still a little chilled from the weather outside. I can imagine, she murmured, withdrawing her hand. Jesus, he couldn't take his jacket off. Out of reflex, and because he hated being unarmed, he'd grabbed his bag off the carousel and ducked into the nearest men's room to slip his Glock into his shoulder rig, and then he'd completely forgotten about it. He'd had no idea whatsoever that an hour after landing, he'd actually be sitting down with Caroline, who wanted him to take his jacket off. Jack was very, very good at strategic planning. He'd been born with it. Then Colonel Prescott and the Army had taken that and refined it. Jack had been an outstanding operative, always able to think several moves ahead. The fact that he hadn't thought to hide his weapon before entering the bookshop, where he might be expected to take his jacket off, was off his own personal radar. That was exactly the kind of mistake that could have gotten him killed on the job.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?